This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT, streaming live also on the Sports Beat app, which is brought to you by Auto Import Specialists, located on Western Avenue. AIS specializes in auto sales, service, and detailing. Avoid the stress. Call AIS. We have Vince Dodario, Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett on the program today. Jerry Janowski producing back in our WSBT studios. We are getting set for Duke and Notre Dame at Notre Dame Stadium Saturday at 2:30 right here on WSBT Radio. And Chuck Freebie is going to join us every Wednesday like the last couple of years to talk some Fighting Irish football and also let you know all about all the great things that is going to happen on WNDU's countdown to kickoff before every home game from Notre Dame Stadium. Chuck, it's good to catch up with you once again. How are you and the family?
Great to be with you guys. Everything is going great. And, boy, we're here. We're on the precipice. Assuming no disaster hits between now and Saturday, we've got a football game at Notre Dame Stadium. And that's something that a lot of us doubted might happen this season.
No question about that. So going into this first game, Chuck, what do you have more confidence in, the offense or the defense?
I'm going to go with the defense. I think that overall I've got a lot of faith in Clark Lee. You look at the fact that only once has his defense given up more than 30 points, and that's not to say that I don't have confidence in the offense, because I think this is going to be a very good football team and have a very solid year. That said, I think the defense just, under Clark Lee, has taken strides that we really haven't seen Notre Dame defenses take in a long, long time. And they bring a lot of weapons to the table. I like Hamilton in the secondary. I'm a little nervous about the corners, as I think a lot of different people are. Really like the defensive line. I think that defensive line could be a difference maker in this game on Saturday.
Okay, I'm going to keep going then, Chuck. I feel it. I'm just going
to
keep going.
I didn't mean to stun you with a brief answer. I'm sorry.
We just have a big panel. I was going to let everybody else talk, but I'll just keep on going then. What the heck? You know, we've had so many discussions the last couple of years, Chuck, about Ian Book and what he is capable of, and for that matter, what he has done and what we'd like to see him do. What do you think the next step for Ian Book is this year, and do you expect him to reach that next step?
The next step comes in the Saturday against Clemson at the stadium. That's really the only knock on Ian Book, isn't it? Is the fact that he has not won what we call the big game. He's gone from that quarterback that we thought was a game manager 2 years ago to a quarterback that could win you a football game like the Virginia Tech game last year. Now the next step, of course, is to put Notre Dame into a position to win a championship. And the only way that happens, the road for the Irish goes through the Clemson Tigers. And so whether it's the game where they beat them at the stadium in the second Saturday of November, or I should say the first Saturday of November, or if they get another shot at them in the ACC championship game, at some point, Ian Book has to beat Trevor Lawrence. That's easier said than done, but that's what has to happen.
Yeah. Well, you take a look at his targets right now, at least going into the first game, if you believe the depth chart. And, Chuck, we've been doing this a long time, and you giggle. You know what I was going to say. You take that with a grain of salt. But Skoranek, McKinley, and Davis would appear to be the starters. And I think we all assume there's going to be a rotation of wide receivers. It's not going to be just those three. Do you think those three give Ian Book the best chance for success early on in the season? Is this all about getting more veteran players on the field early?
Well, I think Ian Book really seems to like Ben Skoranek. I mean, that's a name that has really come up time and time again when we've heard from Brian Kelly. Because, let's face it, last night was the first time in the calendar year of 2020 that we've heard from the players. But Ben Skoranek's name is one that keeps coming up, and even Book was asked about the receivers and went to Skoranek. And I can picture him being that kind of possession receiver that Ian has always liked. When I need a first down, who's the guy I have to go to? Now, I would not be so hard. A lot of people are saying, well, how in the world did Javon McKinley beat out Braden Lindsay for the spot? And I thought Brian brought up a good point last night in that Braden Lindsay's not built for 60 snaps. I mean, if you want to run the football and you want your receivers to block, would you rather have Javon McKinley or Braden Lindsay blocking? The answer is simple. It's McKinley.
Sure.
But don't forget that Javon McKinley averaged over 22 yards a catch last year for this team. He can be a big play guy. He just hasn't been asked to do that because the Irish had Chase Claypool. The Irish had Miles Boykin. The Irish have never had to use Javon McKinley in that role. It doesn't mean that he can't be that guy.
Hmm. Chuck Freebie, the host of WNDU's Countdown to Kickoff. Also, of course, involved with the WHME High School Football Game of the Week, and we'll talk more about that coming up in a couple of moments as well. Do you think there will be an even more push to run the ball this year and run it more effectively? Is that something that comes along with the change in offensive coordinator?
I think it does. I think when you look at the plethora of tight ends that Notre Dame has, those big bodies that you have as receivers, Skronik and McKinley, and this veteran offensive line where everybody on the offensive line has had at least 11 starts in their career, at some point you need to be able to run block. Now, if you look at Notre Dame last year, Tony Jones wound up emerging as the number one back. I don't think anybody expected that at the beginning of the year. The second leading rusher was Ian Book, which tells you that in that group of running backs, Jameer Smith, Jafar Armstrong. Of course, Armstrong was hurt, but I really like Kyron McWilliams, what we've seen of him in flashes. And obviously, all we have to go on for Chris Tyree is high school film. But from the bill of goods we're being sold by Brian Kelly, you would have to think that Chris Tyree is somebody who is going to see quite a bit of playing time on the field. I think Kelly does like the fact that he can rotate backs in there and find the hot back. The question is, when he finds the hot back, will that be a guy that winds up getting 20 carries in a game? And can either McWilliams or Tyree hold up to that kind of battery?
Mm-hmm. You stole my next question. I was going to ask you, do you think it's going to be running back by committee, maybe a guy gets hot, you ride him? So you kind of gave me the answer before I even asked the question. You can read my mind. It's very scary.
That's how prescient 33 years or so of covering this team will make you, Derek.
I guess so. Chuck, let's just move on over to the defensive side of the football. I'm really curious to see the pass rush. Okwara and Kareem. Last year, I don't think we got as much out of Okwara as we anticipated. Kareem, pretty rock solid, played through an injury. Give him a lot of credit. He could have packed up in November, got ready for the NFL draft, but he closed out the year. And total credit for Kareem being a team player and wanting to finish the year with his teammates. Okwara did not have that luxury with his injury. So even though the pass rush maybe wasn't as good as anticipated, it was still okay last year. Where do you anticipate a lot of pressure coming this year?
Well, obviously, I think you have to look at Dalen Hayes, and it's kind of his time to put some numbers up type of year. A year ago, we were expecting big things out of Dalen Hayes, and then he got hurt in the Virginia game, so we weren't able to see what he would do with a full year of development. Let's see, and taking away the off-the-field issues that I know some people don't like about Dalen Hayes, I think it's personally fine. You take that away, it's still a distraction. And the question is, can you focus enough on your craft? Apparently he has, because this team has made him a captain. His teammates believe in him.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's time for him to go out and perform on the field with Ogundeji on the other side. And I think Ogundeji is a guy with his ranginess. And he talked last night a lot about working hard on getting his get off, as he called it, getting off the ball, getting off the blocker, and having some more burst off the line of scrimmage to make that pass rush go. I also think that you might see some effectiveness in the pass rush from Kurt Heinisch, particularly in this first game where he's going up against the backup center from Duke. And granted, somebody that has a little bit of experience, But there's a reason you were the backup center. And so I look for Hynish to try to exploit that gap between the center and the guard and maybe be able to get some push right up the middle in this pass rush on Saturday. I'm not sure that'll be the case all season long. Obviously, Hayes and Ogundeji have to carry the load for most of the pass rush.
Chuck, 7 days ago, did you anticipate we would be discussing true freshman corner Clarence Lewis as a possible candidate to start the first game against the Duke Blue Devils?
I thought it was more likely Clarence Ellis from the 1971 team would start
look at
corner
you.
Than Clarence Lewis.
Nice.
But nevertheless, Clarence Lewis is somebody who came in here a little bit under the radar, but I have watched a little bit of video on him. He's impressive in high school. And the other thing about him that's impressive is not just his cover skills, but his tackling skills. And I think that's one thing that Brian Kelly is looking for. You know what's driven Kelly nuts about defenses in the past are broken tackles and giving up yards after contact. He understands in big boy college football, you're going to give up some passing yards, and that'll be the case again on Saturday with Chase Bryce at quarterback. He's got some targets to throw to. But the key is don't get beat deep and tackle the man once he catches the ball. I think Clarence Lewis can do both of those things and do them pretty well from what we've seen. Now, again, it's high school film. It's not big boy D1 college football. So let's see what happens because Duke does have some weapons on the outside.
Yeah.
And I think that's something to keep an eye on in this game on Saturday.
Maybe those website talent evaluators who called him a 3-star were wrong. How could that be possible? Maybe he didn't go to the right camp to get that 4-star status.
That's only happened, I don't know, about hundreds or thousands of times before.
And yet people still subscribe. It absolutely blows me away. So Sean Crawford moving to safety full-time. Any worries there? We know he's a smart football player, as gutty a football player as we've seen at Notre Dame in a long time. But any concerns at all about his size playing that position?
Well, not only his size, but his durability. I mean, let's face it. I know they've been freak injuries, but he's had injuries. He's on, what, his 12th year here at the university?
Six. He can come back next year, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, he could be the first seven-year player in the history of the University of Notre Dame. But you have to be concerned about that. And I think it also raises an eyebrow as to what's going on with the development of Houston Griffith. Because Houston Griffith was a kid that came in here similar to the reputation of Kyle Hamilton, quite frankly. A lot of people expected Houston Griffith to make great contributions as freshman. And here we are, he's a junior, and he's still playing behind Sean Crawford. So obviously he hasn't done something. Maybe there's something faulty in the traits. I don't know. But there's something that's not connecting there between him and the coaches where he's getting on the field. Now, he may not have any choice. He may wind up being the nickel back in this situation. Or, you know, if Crawford goes down with an injury, boom, you're going to have to go with Houston Griffith. So I think the jury is still out on Griffith somewhat, but am I comfortable with Sean Crawford there? Yeah. In short bursts. Do I think he's going to hold up over an 11-game season? Not really confident in that.
This might be the first and likely the only time in your lifetime on this program you will be asked this question, but does Notre Dame make the conference championship game?
Yeah, it probably will be the only time in my lifetime I'm asked that question, and I think they will. I think they're only going to – if I were making a prediction on the season right now, I think the worst-case scenario for this team is 9-2. I just think they have too many veterans and too many good players in a conference that, quite frankly, it's kind of a blessing for Notre Dame. It's a favor for Notre Dame what's happened this football season.
Sure.
You go from having Wisconsin and USC on the schedule to putting a game with Duke and Syracuse on there. I think most teams would take that trade-off. You know, in terms of competition. So, obviously, the Clemson game is the one that everybody points to. the one of the great traits that Brian Kelly has had as a coach is he hasn't lost a lot of the games that you expect them to win. They've really done a good job of defending home field, and a lot of their tougher matchups in the conference this year are at Notre Dame Stadium, where they've won 18 straight. And only, I think it's Clemson, Ohio State, and UCF have longer home winning streaks than the Irish do.
Right.
So I look at the game at North Carolina. I worry about that game a little bit, even though the Irish have a bye week to prepare for it. It's Thanksgiving Friday. Who knows what your mindset is going into that? And a lot of things can happen in 2020 between now and then. And then, of course, as we said, Clemson.
And, Chuck, just to add on to your Carolina comment, maybe lost in the shuffle, even with that bye week, that is 4 out of 5 games on the road. That's the end of that stretch.
Right.
So I'm sure there's going to be extra work to go on the road and play football this year during the pandemic. So that worries me a little bit as well, despite the fact Mac Brown's got a really good football team. So Duke, Notre Dame.
He's got a really good football team, Darren. And the other thing about that is, you know, we don't know how much Matt Bayless was able to work with this team. Mm-hmm. Last year, it was a team that seemed to get stronger as the year went on.
True.
And you would hope that would still be the case. But 4 out of 5 on the road, and you're at the end of November. How will this team hold up to that kind of grind?
Yeah. So Duke, Notre Dame, is it a close contest on Saturday?
For a half, I think it is. And then I think the Irish open it up in the second half. And I'm not going to make a score prediction yet, but the odds makers, the last I saw, had this one right around 21, 20 and a half. I think that's a pretty accurate spread. I think Duke has some dudes. They don't have enough dudes to keep up with the Irish for 4 quarters.
WNDU's countdown to kickoff is back right before Notre Dame football home game. So with the kickoff at 2:30, are we going to have airtime at 1:30, and what should we expect?
Airtime at 1:30. We've recorded already an interview with Tony Dungy, the new man in the booth for NBC,
nice.
Who has a ton of great insights to share, so we'll have that. Obviously, we're going to try to catch you up to date on everything that happened during the off season. Unfortunately, it's only a 1-hour show. So we'll try to cram all of that in as well, plus things with Ian Book, the latest from Brian Kelly. Of course, he's got that new press conference that he'll have tomorrow, maybe giving us a little more of an update and insight on anything that's happened. But I think the Tony Dungy piece, in fact, he was so good, I think we're breaking that into two pieces, and that's
nice.
Really going to be worth the watch on Saturday.
Definitely. Are you on the field?
No, we are not on the field because we are not ACC personnel. We're not wearing a striped shirt or a uniform, so nobody is on the field. We'll be, I think we're in a hovercraft above the field.
Maybe you could borrow old Chopper Charlie's helicopter. What do you think?
Oh,
just float around the stadium.
I flew around in one of those for years too. I've got my leather bomber jacket just in case I'm needed there.
And what about WHME game of the week on Friday?
We're just trying to put together a telecast that'll match the audio stylings of Sean Steyer's. That's all we're trying to do. We know everybody's going to listen to Mishawaka and Warsaw on the radio. You know, you can put our feed up on Facebook and YouTube and see how well it matches up with Sean's call. And then when you want to go to sleep 11 o'clock Friday night or go back to sleep 9 o'clock Saturday morning, you can watch our telecast.
Well, that's probably not the best idea because Brian Miller will be calling the game. So if you're waiting for Sean,
you're
not going to hear a whole lot.
Where's Sean?
Oh, we have big schedules around here. We're here, there, and everywhere when you're in demand. You can only do so much.
You know, he's got to turn around. He's got to do the show with you on Saturday.
Yeah.
All kinds of things. But, you know, Brian Miller, I think the existing warrants are out for him and more so. So he should be fine.
Very good. Chuck, always good to catch up with you. Always fun to talk football with you. We look forward to doing it throughout the season once again. And I look forward to checking out a little football on my TV Friday night, so I will be checking you out just to see how you guys are doing, and if there's any pointers I can pass along, I'll be happy to do so. But I don't think you need any help, that's for sure. You guys have this mastered.
I'm just there to fill the time between Bob's live reads.
That's right. And that's really true. I don't know why I'm laughing. That's actually dead serious. So
that's exact. And with Mishawaka and Warsaw both running the same offense, that thing could be done in an hour and a half. So you better tune in early, folks.
You got that right. Chuck, be well. Good to hear from you. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Darren.
All right. Chuck Freebie from WNDU's Countdown to Kickoff. You can catch the Countdown to Kickoff show Saturday at 1:30. Again, Tony Dungy, an interview, will be one of the focuses of that program.
Rapid Fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett.
We'll start with something that I saw from Stuart Mandel, college football writer from The Athletic. He listed four college football games this weekend that he thinks will fall into the trap of bringing the most overreaction. Notre Dame versus Duke is one of his games, and here's what Mandel has to say. Every Notre Dame game is a referendum of some sort, but this one even more so as its first ACC game. Either the Irish will roll and legitimize their annual national title hopes, or they'll struggle and prove overrated. Neither of which may be true, because Duke could actually be decent with Clemson transfer quarterback Chase Bryce, but the Blue Devils also lost veteran center Jack Wollabaugh to an ACL injury, and really, who the heck really knows? End quote. So, do you guys buy or sell that explanation?
Okay. Well, first of all, if anybody thinks that after Notre Dame plays Duke, that automatically their national title hopes are legitimized, that's ridiculous. And I guess maybe he's referring to all the overreactors out there with one game or whatever. I don't know that I buy it. I'm going to sell it just because I wouldn't have picked this game to mean anything outside of the fact that it is the first ACC game in Notre Dame's history as far as being a member of the conference. Other than that, all this other nonsense, I sell the rest of this. I think it's ridiculous, and I don't...
Huh.
I'm not going to buy or sell Notre Dame as a national title contender until they beat Clemson, and that doesn't happen until November. I don't take anything from this game.
Yeah, this is boring. This stuff doesn't matter what he's writing about. It's a writer just trying to find something to write about because we've written about everything at this point. Nobody knows anything about any of these teams because no one was in practices. We don't know anything, so how can you overreact to something we know nothing about? So this is just a waste of time
Notre Dame
of a writer.
Football.
No,
that's the point.
Everybody.
It's Notre Dame
it's
football.
Everybody. We don't know about any team at this moment.
Darren, football is so different than any other sport because we overreact on every game. Every week is a referendum on the team. If Ian Book has a bad game, we're going to overreact to it on Monday. So I buy it from that
not
aspect that it is.
No, we didn't overreact that Michigan game. No. I was not overreacting after the Michigan game. I wanted Ian Book still as a quarterback, gave the team the best chance to win, and that turned out to be exactly right. So I didn't overreact when they lost to Michigan, and that was a horrible performance. But I didn't overreact, so don't put me in the we category. Sorry,
I don't know what Michigan has to do with Duke.
I'm showing overreact to everything that happens in football.
Okay, all right, always. So, sorry, I'll take my air quotes down on always. Okay. Which is worse, that Ian Book grew a training camp mustache or that
he'll
have to shave
it off?
Why is this
so sensitive? I don't understand. I'm just giving my opinion.
No, I'm sorry, Darren, you're never sensitive. All right.
What does that mean?
You tell me. You're the one yelling at me.
I'm not yelling at you. I'm making a point. Okay, go right ahead.
I already asked the question.
Well, I will jump in then on the training camp mustache. I thought it was ridiculous when he grew it last year. I think it's ridiculous now, but I think it's hilarious that he has to shave it off before his mom gets into town. Because I think his mom must be in like a Facebook group with my wife that they don't like facial hair or whatever. So I think it's hilarious that he has to shave it off before his mom gets into town. So I think that's awesome.
This was truly asked in the press conference last night. I'm amazed by that. That's my answer.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm going to go with shaving it off because I think almost every college kid these days wants to grow the facial hair. I think it's more so the beards maybe than mustaches these days. I couldn't grow one at that age myself. I would have if I could have. So, if you grow it, keep it. Your mom only has to see it a couple times a month. So he's in self-quarantine anyway, so I would keep it. All right, so if BYU goes undefeated this season, do you buy or sell them being in the college football playoff?
Ooh, that one's tough. I mean, they looked excellent against Navy. That Navy team looked so overmatched in the parts of the game that I watched. By the time I turned it on, that game was well over. I think I turned it on at halftime just because I couldn't get to it in time, but BYU looked very, very good in that game. Now, let's see, what the rest of their schedule looks like and how they do.
I know.
If they go undefeated, I just don't think the strength of their schedule is going to be enough to put them in the playoff, depending on what else is going. Now, if they're just carnage across college football and we're talking about teams with two-plus losses, then they'll have a debate, and they'll have an axe to grind, I would imagine. But I don't see that happening across the board. So I'm going to say no, I do not buy that.
Yeah, Vince, it's going to be awfully hard because they probably played one of the more tougher games already, and they won 55-3. You got Army,
exactly.
Troy, UTSA, Houston, Texas State, Western Kentucky, and North Alabama. If you're not going to put a Sun Belt team or an American Athletic team into the college football playoff, how can you put that independent schedule in the playoff? So, again, there's a lot of unknowns, but that just doesn't look like a schedule for a team that would get into the playoff. No shot.
Right.
Well,
go
ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, that's the schedule that they have. And I mean, I realize it's tough for them because they are an independent. They had to put together the schedule that they could with the Pac-12 playing. They don't even have the ability to play anyone in their neighborhood out there, Utah. Obviously, their biggest rival. So you just, with between the fact that it's eight games and it's that schedule, I agree with what Darren's saying. You can't put them in the playoff. They have no business being anywhere near the play because they should run the table against that schedule. And that's a potential one of those things that's going to come up in November. What do you do with BYU? And I think you can't put them in with that schedule.
So do you think, I'll throw one at you, Sean. Do you think? What do you think Notre Dame's schedule would have looked like if they couldn't have partnered up with the ACC?
That's a really good question.
I mean, I guess they could have been the plus one for every ACC team or whatever, but, man, I just have a feeling they would have been real close to having a schedule like that.
Yeah, they very well might have, and that's why they're fortunate that they had this relationship with the ACC, and it afforded them the opportunity to be able to have a schedule like they have. All right, a basketball topic came up today. Speaking of selection, and I feel like Darren and I might disagree on this as well, so who knows where we'll go. ACC men's basketball coaches are proposing an expanded 2021 NCAA tournament that would include every Division I team. Multiple reports say the league's coaches voted to propose the expansion of this year's March Madness to the NCAA, and Mike Bray, of course, Notre Dame coach, tweeted about it this afternoon as well. So do you buy or sell allowing all 350 teams to participate in the tournament this season?
Well, since apparently you guys are going to face off, I'll go ahead and jump in on this one. I don't like it, to be honest with you. I feel like all the conference tournaments are pretty much elimination games in the first place. And so they're talking about having a conference tournament and then again having all 350 teams. I just think that's just way too watered down. I mean, if people love March Madness and they want an extra weekend or two of this thing, but And I understand where they're coming from, the fact that they're probably going to have conference only, or the potential of having conference only, you know, games, et cetera, and you're not going to be able to have crossover and all that. I do not like all 350 teams. I just think that that's just too many.
Bench, just for fun, the actual total is 357, so you have to have a play-in game to get to 356.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
So we'll put that on True TV, and that'll just be some of the greatest action that you will ever see. If it is a conference-only season, that's the only way I could see this being the direction that they go, because it's going to be very difficult to evaluate teams when you're playing only a conference schedule. So this, I would say that opens the door for something like this to happen. Now, if we get to play non-conference games, I absolutely do not want this. It is not something that everybody gets to participate in, and that's what makes it so doggone great. It is an exclusive club. It is just as exciting to make the tournament as play in the tournament. It is a big day on Selection Sunday when you make the field of 68, and you lose all that exclusivity if you go to this 357-team NCAA tournament. Again, if it's conference only, I think we have to make a judgment. Make adjustments. This is an over adjustment, in my particular opinion. Maybe you go to 128 teams. I know they're trying to make money back. I understand. I totally get it. But what makes this 3-week tournament so special is the elite teams, and I hate to say elite because we know those small conference teams get in, but for the most part, the best of the best playoff in the greatest 3 weeks that we have on the sports calendar, and that partially goes away when you go to 357 teams. And let's don't forget, you got to pay for all this. And by Title IX, guys, you got to do the same thing for the women's basketball tournament. So you got to think about all the cost of doing something like that. This should not be just the men. Anything the men do, the women should have the right to do equally. So
that's right.
I think we have to factor that into this whole conversation.
No, I mean, that's a very fair point. You know, that's going to factor into this as well. And some of the initial, because Mike Bray was talking about this a few months ago when we had him on the show, and we asked him about an all-inclusive expanded tournament, and he was all for it. And there's you know, again, there have been different articles that have sort of popped up here and there over the last month or two on this subject, and they've talked about sort of regional pods and stuff like this to eliminate some of the travel that you're kind of talking about, how you would have to match it with the women and all that. And I mean, obviously we don't know the full details about it, but Mike Bray tweeted about it this afternoon, and he mentioned the Milan Miracle, you know, that the movie Hoosiers is based on. And of course, Indiana, everyone's in the tournament, you know, you don't have to qualify for the postseason and all that different kind of stuff. I'm not married to it. I do agree with what Darren's saying there, that if it is a conference-only tournament, it makes more sense to do it at that point because it makes it harder to compare resumes if you're not playing non-conference games and stuff like that. But at the same time, I guess I'm intrigued by the possibility of, you know, like they're talking about everybody getting in this year, in part because everybody missed it last year because there was no tournament, and the extra, you know, excitement it would generate by allowing everybody in this year. And, you know, there's the possibility to have, this is probably a 2-month tournament if you're going to have all 357 teams in there. It's like a 2-month tournament to, you know, to play through all these rounds. So you've got 2 solid months of games that matter. I mean, you're going to lose some of that early excitement and stuff like that, you know, like you have with, you know, a 14 seed knocking off a team and that kind of thing. But I mean, TV networks, radio stations all took hits with the loss of content, you know, from March Madness for months with the loss of sports content when the pandemic started. And I think an event like this, you know, it gives one, it gives compelling content that everybody can watch, and it gives the TV and radio stations a chance to carry it. So again, I'm not married to it, but I am at least, I'm my curiosity is piqued by the possibility of doing something like this.
No, let me just jump right back in here real quick. I'm okay with them expanding it a little bit, maybe double, but I just think 350 is just too much.
Okay.
My team's in the Ohio Valley Conference. My alma mater will never make the NCAA tournament in my lifetime. I resigned to that fact, and I don't want them to get in this fashion. You have to earn it. It makes the regular season absolutely pointless, other than claiming conference championships. It just, I don't want my team to get into the tournament just because everybody gets in. I want them to get in because they 100% earned it, and you just don't do that in this particular format. I will say this. The great thing about the Indiana High School Basketball Tournament is if you are a small school or a big school, you have a chance to win a trophy at the end of the sectional round and the regional round. And for a lot of schools, that is like winning the state championship.
It's a big deal.
It is a big, big deal, and that's great. But in the NCAA basketball tournament, you win two games. It's not like you really earn anything. You just kind of move on in this huge, colossal bracket. Can you imagine filling that out? I just don't see the point. I get it. It's money, money, money. Everything is money right now. I understand. But I could live with 128 teams, but that's just going overboard, putting in 357. And I'm not sure why the ACC coaches get to be the ones that try to throw this out there, but they're standing out there and trying to push this, but 100% against it, unless there is just something in the way teams are picked this year that it's going to make it impossible to do so. Then we just have to change the format. But this is going way overboard.
No, I mean, I agree with what you said there. I would like doubling the field. I would be more for that than going to the full 350. Let's put it that way, because you know, again, it's more content. It gives everybody, it kind of helps make up, you know, hopefully for some of the loss of what we had last year when we missed the whole thing. I mean, I do agree with that. I wouldn't mind doubling the field. I would rather just double the field than go to the full 350. But again, I you know, games that count, I get what you're saying as well about you earn your way into the tournament, but you also have to earn your way through the tournament, whether it's a win or a loss once you're in there, regardless of how you got there. So we're probably behind for breaks. Do you want to take one before we do this last question, or what do you want to do?
This last question's interesting. We might as well just do it.
Okay. Fill in the blank. It is blank that the Orlando Magic have ditched their radio broadcast team and will simulcast its TV broadcast on the radio next year.
Personally, I think it's terrible, and that's only because, look, you guys are the pros at play-by-play and all that stuff, and there is a huge difference listening and working with radio guys than it is for TV. It's just a completely different scenario. Radio guys know how to paint the picture. TV guys let the picture do the talking for them. It's just it's a different animal, and it's not going to play well on the radio. I think that that's a coward move for cost saving is what I'm guessing. I don't like it at all. I think it's terrible.
Baseball and football, it's more doable. Basketball and hockey is more about where the ball or the puck is, and a lot of descriptions go into those two. So for basketball to be the one, I'm not quite sure that's a great idea, because there's so much description that goes into a radio call. TV, you can tell stories, and you don't have to worry about necessarily the play-by-play. So that doesn't make a lot of sense. But as I've learned in my experiences, there's a lot of dumb people that run businesses, and they don't know a lot about broadcasting, and they make bad decisions, and this is one of those bad decisions.
Yep.
No, I agree, because, I mean, if you're going to, you know, and I have no idea what the radio crew made versus the TV crew, you know, just the whole thing. But if you were going to do a simulcast, it should be the other way around, just because of that. Because
absolutely.
Now, it might be annoying watching on TV and getting an overly described game, but that is still better than the fact that, you know, when it's a radio broadcast and you're listening to a TV broadcast, and guys who are used to doing TV, you know, let's be honest, we listened to Don Criqui for a long time. He was a guy who's done TV for decades. He came to radio, and there were spaces that were missing because
below average. Let's be honest. He was well below average. He was calling the game like it was on TV, and you can't do
exactly
that on radio.
And that was my point. I was being kind, but
you were being very kind. You're being very kind.
There's a big difference going from TV to radio than the other way around.
Yeah, no question. Well, I will say there's precedent. The Blackhawks, when I was just starting to get into hockey in the 80s, Pat Foley would call the game on radio and TV because I remember he used to say, you're listening to Blackhawks hockey on Sports Channel and WBBM. So it's been done, but wow, it's disappointing to hear because the two ways of broadcasting are so different.
Oh, yeah.
It's disappointing to hear, to say the least.
Yep, I agree.
All right, that's Rapid Fire. We'll take a quick break, 6:52 at WSBT. All right, Matt, thank you. Cubs and White Sox still in first place in their respective divisions. Cubs and Reds at 8:15. White Sox in a couple of minutes will be at Pittsburgh. Cubs coming off a 3-0 win last night. The White Sox lost to the Pirates 5-4. And don't forget, we have Major League Baseball Sunday night on WSBT Radio. Actually, you know what? I don't think we're actually going to have that because we've got NFL on Sunday. So we will just cross that off the list. But we'll have some postseason baseball in just a couple of weeks here on WSBT. Let's take our final break, 6:56 at WSBT. Budweiser's weekday sports beat brought to you by Budweiser, locally distributed by United Beverage Company of South Bend, urging you to stay safe as we get back on track and we kick off the football season. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. By Kyle's Auto Repair, keep your car running smoothly with timely routine maintenance. Call Kyle's at 255-6152. And we have been live on the Sports Beat app, brought to you by Auto Import Specialists, located on Western Avenue. AIS specializes in auto sales, service, and detailing. Avoid the stress. Call AIS. Spence, I know you're going to be calling football Friday. You on Sports Beat on Friday, too?
I am on Sports Beat, but I actually will not be calling the game.
Oh, you're not?
On Friday. Yeah, okay. I don't know. Brian Miller has a special guest lined up. He went into the old guard, and I think he got somebody really good. Ooh. So he wanted to go that route, and I said, hey, you go right ahead. I'll spend some time with my family.
Well, the A-team will just take the day off then. We'll put
that's
the
B-team right.
out there. Brian doesn't mind being called the B-team, right? His first name starts with a B. That's what we're referring
right.
to.
There that's absolutely right.
All right. Guys, enjoyed it. We will talk to you again soon. We've got Carter Carls on the program tomorrow talking Fighting Irish football recruiting. It is 7 o'clock at WSBT South Bend.